Welcome to Inside the Match, where Alex and Simone talk residency applications.
We are two residents here to help you navigate the match.
For each podcast, we'll bring you residents from various specialties and backgrounds to give advice. So today we are super excited to have Dr. Dottillo, who's going to speak about preference signaling within general surgery. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about your current position within the general surgery residency program.
I am an associate professor of surgery at University of Arizona in Tucson. I am the program director for general surgery. I also am the associate program director for our acute care surgery and surgical critical care fellowship. And I work in the medical school doing faculty development.
Well, you have lots of different positions, and we are so excited to speak with you about preference signaling because general surgery is not new to preference signaling. We have 16 specialties that are participating this year, but general surgery got to experience it last year. Can you tell me a little bit about what preference signaling is?
Yeah. So one of the problems we have in the match is that we've really turned it into a zero-sum game, and every resident candidate feels like they have to tell you that they're in love with your program and that that's going to be their number one choice, or they're not going to match with you. And then every program, to a certain extent, feels like we have to tell you that you're the best candidate ever. And it all came from a good place. Like most bad things, it comes from a good place, right? So we wanted to have it as even a field as possible, not giving special privileges to only the biggest programs. So instead, we swung the pendulum all the way to the other side so we can't be honest with each other. And that lack of honesty really puts both the program and the medical student in a bad position. There is no way in the current system that you can say, I really want to come here. When I was a medical student, my grades were, and I can remember telling my number one place, and I had done 6 rotations there. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. I want to come here. This is my number one choice. And I was very friendly with the program manager. And I can remember her saying that the program director did not believe me. And I'm like, I don't know how many more rotations I have to do here to tell you I love it here, but this is the problem that we have. And to be perfectly honest with you, for fellowship and for residency, I'm tired of this game. I wish there was some way that we could just say, I really like your program and I'm going to put you in the top of my list and then go from there. And what the signaling lets the students do is say, I have X number of tokens and I'm not going to waste that on places that either know me really well and know I've had the opportunity to tell everybody face-to-face, I want to be here. It's for the other programs to say, I know you have a whole bunch of medical students who say they want to be here, but I like your place so much that I'm going to give up this special golden ticket, just like in the movie. And I'm going to tell you I want to be here. And you know that you have a really good chance, if you rank me high, of me ranking you high, and maybe the match works out that way. And it's not perfect. It is in no way, shape, or form a perfect system, but it is certainly a move in the direction to give a level of honesty on the medical student side. I just wish there was some way that we could do the same thing. I would love to have tokens on the program side also and tell students, you're my top 6 picks, right? I have an 8 residency program, but you are definitely in the top, and that would be great.
So it sounds like this is definitely a start to try to figure out how to solve this problem, which is becoming a huge deal, especially in competitive specialties like surgery, where people are over applying and spending a lot of money on the ERAS applications themselves. And so let's say that I do preference one of 5 programs and it happens to be the University of Arizona Tucson campus. How do you use that preference signal as a program director in comparison to someone who does not signal your program?
So, I mean, if you just look at how many people are going to be using their signals for a given program, you have to take it with a grain of salt. So really where, in my mind, where I think it helps is we have a candidate who we think would fit in really well here. We think they'd be a really good resident. The residents who interviewed them like them, the faculty really likes them. We want to rank them high. And then the question becomes, should we waste one of our top, because we have 8 residents. So should we waste one of our top 8 picks on someone who doesn't want to be here? Should we aim for the sky? And if we don't get those people and we overrank, are we going to get them, right? Now, if you have someone who's signaling that they like you and you know that when you rank your candidates, they're high, this is like any great dating site, like you've made your match and you feel it gives a lot of confidence to the program director that you should put them in one of your top slots, knowing that there's a really good chance that you're going to match together. It's never going to be a perfect system. It's never going to be 100%, but getting rid of a little bit of that doubt that's there is, in my mind, incredibly helpful.
So in regards to preference signaling, is it something that programs are using for the interviews and for the ranking process, or is it just something that your program specifically has chosen to use for the interviews to determine whether or not to grant someone a position to actually interview at your program?
No one has an answer for that. Anyone who tells you they have an answer, they're experimenting because it's brand new. So there are some program directors who feel like it's a great way to figure out who to come and invite for the program. And for others, they're going to use it. And I've spoken to some of those program directors. They're going to use it when they do their rank list. I think both of them are right. I don't think there's a wrong way. It's which one do you think you struggle more with? In my mind, I think it's when we do the actual match. But I could definitely see using it for preference on who's going to interview and who's not.
And something that General Surgery is doing this year is that they are having 5 as the maximum number of signals. And they also advise that someone signal their home institution and where they did away rotations. And so can you tell me about why that came to be the decision?
Yeah, this is one of the real controversial areas. And what it comes down to is, are you going to get buy-in from everybody? In a perfect mythical land where everybody is being very honest with each other, and not focusing only on themselves. If someone says, I want to come here and signals, that should be enough, right? And if you're at a home program where you went to medical school here, we've had an opportunity to work with you much more than just someone who's coming through for a month as a fourth year. You did your 6 or 8 or 12 week rotation on surgery. We should have a good idea of whether or not you want to come. But there's always this idea that the medical students are telling us what we want to hear, as opposed to telling us what we should hear. And when you have close relationships, it's a lot easier. I was clerkship director before I took over residency. This last group that just matched, these were my students. I knew them very well as third years. I helped them navigate the whole program as fourth years. I knew who wanted to come here. I had no doubts about that. And our relationships were good enough with it. When they said, you know, I really want to go somewhere else. I want to experience another way of doing things. I didn't take that as good or bad. This is your match. If you want to go somewhere else, if there's another place you want to live, then my job is to help you get there, not just sell my program. And I tell everybody all the time, if you're miserable when you get to a place, my life will be miserable also. So it behooves me to help my people go where they want to go and then get people who want to be here, just or as opposed to people who just want the name. I think that's not a great way to enter the match.
Speaking of where someone wants to go and if they want to experience another area of the country, that comes to the geographic preferences where you're able to look at regions or urban or rural areas. Can you tell us a little bit about how someone should choose and which areas they want to go, especially if they may have grown up their entire life in the Midwest or the South? Does it seem like a great idea to put another area of the country as your preference and choice?
Yeah. So the geographic signaling is an interesting little tidbit. This is my personal take on it. Traditionally, program directors got a lot of information because they know that the vast majority of the residents who match in their program come from a very small diameter. If you put a pin on where your institution is, most of your people are going to come between 50 and 100 miles. And that was in its own way signaling. If you had someone who was interviewing, if I had someone from New York City who was interviewing in Tucson, traditionally a program director would be like, why are they doing this? I'm not. This is a safe program. They don't want to really be here. Or I would have to investigate and see, do they have family here? Did they grow up here? And to be perfectly honest, I never understood that. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But one of the silver linings of virtual interviews is that all goes away, right? Mm-hmm. So my last rotation last year, 2,000 applicants for my program, and it was from everywhere. So as a program, we sat down and was like, geography is not an issue anymore. We have to interview the best candidates. And then when we're interviewing them, find out if they want to be in a place like this. You can tell from my accent, I grew up in the Northeast. I grew up in New York and I trained in New York and Brooklyn. So now I'm all the way in the Southwest. It's about as different as you can get. But when I interview people, I make sure that I talk about the city a ton. That's my job on the interviews, is to give you an idea of what your day-to-day life is. And the best advice I ever got was from someone who said, the university is amazing, the training's amazing, but it's farm country. How many times have you been on a farm? And at that point in my life, I was a New Yorker. No, I did not want to be around cows. And he's like, don't come here. Like, you won't be happy. And that was super important to me. It was one of the most honest interviews I ever got. They wanted me, I wanted them, but they knew I would not be happy for 5 years. And 5 years for surgery is a long time if you're miserable in the place that you live. So I think there's a benefit to geographic signaling, but the overlap is crazy. So like if you say the West Coast, I mean, it is a huge swath of area and I don't know how much it how much it tells you. So I think there's some benefit. I think that program directors, it's like a, it's the whoobie. It's the blanket that, the security blanket that makes them feel better so that they can, they feel like they have a better chance of matching. If you look at my match this year, they're from everywhere. Like half my class is from very far away from here and they're super happy to be here. A lot of East Coast came down and I don't think that's just because of me. I think they were looking for something and they found it. And the city's different and the flavor's different, but it's something that they will enjoy. And so the geographic, I think it's helpful, but I don't think it's as helpful as the other signal.
How cool. It's neat to know that the number of residents that you had from other areas of the country has changed with virtual interviews. Another part of the supplemental application is where you can talk about your experiences. So your response to this question might help programs like Get to Know You, to know what motivates you, to know what you're passionate about. But I'm curious how this differs from the questions and answers that are in the actual ERAS application and whether or not you advise people to speak about similar experiences that they put in their ERAS already, or to talk about completely new opportunities that they want to have the program understand and appreciate about their impactful experiences.
So I think there are two ways to answer this. I'm probably going to get beat up a lot for saying this, but I think it's the truth. The match is a game, okay? And there are rules that the program directors know very, very well. And the medical students kind of have an idea, but to be honest with you, they have no clue what we're looking for, right? So they talk to their classmates who are clueless also, and some things get passed down and some things don't. And that's an issue, right? So when I sit with the third years, I tell them that these are the rules of the game. And if you want to match, you have to play as smart as we're playing. And part of it is you have to accept that this is the way it is, but there are other things that you can change. And it leads into the other question that you had. My program has decided that we are going to embrace what it means to match holistically. My life would be significantly better and I would be much less bald than I am now if I just relied on numbers and used that to sift through residents, right? But we know if you really look at the data, what winds up happening is the diversity of your candidates is lower. The diversity of the people you match is lower also. And then what winds up happening is eventually you will have stagnation and no evolution to your program. Yeah. Some places will say, we're good with that. I'm the top program in the country. I've been like this for the last 20 years. We do great and that's fine. Okay, congratulations. But for the vast majority of people on both sides, that's not the case, right? What this is trying to do is force evolution on a field, which is medicine in general, but specifically surgery, who is fighting against evolution tooth and nail. And all they want to do is live in the past 100 years as some kind of glorious time in surgery. But when you open your eyes and you see what the last 100 years of surgery have been about, from a social standpoint, from a personal standpoint, what we've done to residents is awful, for lack of a better word. Why we want to hang our hats on that makes no sense to me. Talk about the tradition of surgery, talk about what we've brought to the field of medicine, and that is our legacy. But brutalizing residents and keeping people in the hospital for 120 hours, 130 hours a week, like when I was a resident, is not the tradition we should hang our hat on, right? The people who have embraced this have said, if we are unable as a field to evolve, then just like the dinosaurs, there has to be something that is outside of the realm that's going to force evolutionary change. We saw that in COVID, and that's what happened. COVID forced virtual interviews. It forced people to look outside of what's safe and play this game differently. And I think the program directors are angry because they do not evolve as fast as the medical students. Medical students, you give a little information to, and they are all over it. They are willing to change and they're willing to play by the rules that are set. And they've embraced virtual interviews. And now, traditionally, you know, the deans in medical school said 15 interviews. If you're a good candidate, you're fine. And was finding people saying, hey, the rules have changed. It's very difficult to match now. I'm going to apply to more places, which is a traditional strategy for international graduates, for osteopaths. I'm a DO. And now everybody's kind of embracing this idea. And the problem is that the trickle-down effect is not what it used to be. So everybody's trying to learn the new rules of the game and seeing who can stay ahead. So for me, I want to look for people who bring diversity to my program, who see the world differently. And I think that's good because it forces us to get better in ways that I'm not able to understand, right? I think that's a good thing. In order for me to do that, I have to ignore numbers less and then look at the rest of the application and ask, who is this person? And I'm not going to be able to get rotations with everybody. We don't have enough rotations for the 2,000 people who interview with us. So when we go through the applications, what we're looking for are personality traits that we think support our mission as a surgical residency, right? So we sat down when I took over and we said, what's our mission? And then we built a resident. And by building a resident, what I meant is what characteristics in a resident would succeed in our place. And my first ideas, I said, let's come up with 10 characteristics with very different than my APDs, because we cannot be more different from each other, right? And then we put those all together and we said, this is someone who's going to strive and really succeed in the environment that we're putting them in. And then we asked a bunch of other people because we wanted other ideas. And we really came up with this idea of what makes a great resident, not just here, but in general. And that's the characteristics we're looking for. The ERS application doesn't give a lot of opportunity to come up for you to come across individually, right? Every other field, every other industry, when you interview for a job, it's all about your 5-minute elevator talk. How are you? What makes you different than everybody else? What makes you special? I tell the medical students all the time, what's your superpower, right? What makes you different than everybody else? But nowhere in ERAS allows you to do that except a personal statement. And the traditional teaching by the American College of Surgeons, by everyone, is tell us why you want to be a surgeon. Tell us something that makes you think that you're going to fit in with our program. Tell me something about the program you want to be in, which is fine, but it's bland. It's Melba toast. It's not, it doesn't give you anything about who you are. And all you got to do is Google. You just go on, you find out what programs want you to say, and then all the letters look the same. And I tell the medical students all the time, it's the same openings every time. A quote about hard work or, you know, dedication. It's a story about someone in your family who's been sick, or if you've been sick, right? It's something in sports or in something that was competitive, right? And you weave those together and that's your introduction. And by then I've fallen asleep already because it doesn't tell me who you are and what makes you tick. It does a little bit, but I kind of feel manipulated. It's like you're trying to force me to see you in a light or in a lens that I want to see you in. And really what I want to know is, I want to know who Simone is. I want to know who Steve is. I want to know who Jennifer is, because I need to know if you're going to like it here and if we can offer you what you want. If we can do that, it's a great match, right? All around. We succeed, you succeed, fantastic. And then if you don't do it in your personal statement, maybe you get lucky enough to do it on your interview, but more and more programs are going to define questions so that one or two things don't happen. One of your faculty doesn't embarrass you and say something that's completely inappropriate, or you use a standardized question to try to get information that we're looking for. So we do, like we've always done in medicine, standardized questions, looking for standardized answers, as opposed to saying, I'm going to put a little more hard work in and I'm going to get to know who this person is from the inside out or from the outside in, and see if this is someone that you think will do well in your program. But it's just hard to do that. It takes time. The MSPE theoretically should do that, but you know as well as I do, most faculty do not have great training or the time to do evaluations the way we should, right? We say keywords that we think that are important, and we really do hope that that's going to help them. And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. So I'll be honest with you, my program manager and I, when we look at applications, we always look at the opposite of whatever surgery is. Because I know on surgery, I'm going to hear the words that I want to hear. First one in, last one out, always was prepared for the OR, great, you know, all the key words that program directors are looking for. What I'm looking for is when you're on peds, when you're on medicine, when you're on neurology, are those same words there? I want to know that you're inquisitive on pediatrics and you want to learn medicine on peds, mm-hmm. and you interact with the patients on peds the same way you do on surgery. If you do, then that tells me a lot about who you are. The famous quote about, I'm going to get it all wrong, but you know, integrity is what you do when no one's looking. To me, that is that quote on the ERS application. What you do on psych, when you're never wearing scrubs and you're never in the OR, your personality on that rotation, if it's the same as it is on surgery, you're consistent. That's who you are. That's your integrity. But if I see on medicine, you showed up, you punched a card, you did enough to get through, then you are super excited about surgery. But a lot of what you do is not going to be in the OR all the time. A big chunk of what we do is outside the operating room. So I need to know who you are as a person. And there aren't a lot of ways to do that. The supplemental is a pain in the neck for the residents, because it means you have to write more. You have to think more. And I feel awful for it. But what I've been telling my medical students is, this is your opportunity to tell me about your superpower. Tell me who you are as a person. And the questions can really be framed that way. Or we get all of the standardized questions, the ones that you jump on Harvard Business Review and you find out, you know, how to get insight into your interviewees. Get those out during your supplemental, okay? And then use your interview time to get to know you. I think that's a little bit harder. I would rather have my faculty ask the standard questions to see if I can get consistency when they answer an attending or an intern or a resident or one of the PDs, and then use the supplemental to let you shine and find out stuff about you, right? If you are in love with cooking, right? And the idea of learning how to make carbonara and your own pasta, and you tell me you spent 2 years perfecting that, it tells me a massive amount of who you are, right? That kind of perseverance is a quality I want in one of my residents, right? Does it have anything to do with surgery at all? No. Tell me you made the Lego Death Star, and I'm amazed that you have the perseverance and the determination to finish that. Fantastic. That supplemental part, if you play the game the right way, you can do that. Now, is that what all programs are looking for? No. It's just like, how do you dress for an interview? I don't care what you're wearing. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't. Is it a tan suit? Fantastic. Is it a black suit? I don't care. Right. Please don't smell. And please, you know, don't look like you literally rolled out of bed beforehand. But I wear scrubs everywhere because I love that part of my job. I don't think it makes me less professional. Wear what you're comfortable in. Right. I always joke sometimes, it's like, oh, we're on a Zoom interview. You know, I'm sure you're in a pair of sweatpants, because that's what I do all the time. If I have to wear a shirt and tie, I'm wearing something comfortable on the part that the camera can't see. And I've had two of my interviewees stand up and show me that they had shorts on, and I thought it was fantastic. But that's me, right? There are other programs who are just like, look, this is not what we define as professionalism. There's a certain way we want you to look. There's a certain way we want you to dress. When I hear that, I have an allergic reaction against that personally, right? But the medical students have to know that you got to interview for the gig that you're applying to, right? So that may work at some places, and at other places, fantastic. I don't care what's in your background. I don't care if you have a perfectly framed Zoom background. You see, she can see it, but you guys can't. I have toys of my sons that are in my office, and it makes me super happy. Is that any less professional than someone who has all their degrees up? I personally don't think so. Makes me happy. That's all that really matters to me.
And I think that brings us to a really big question about figuring out where you best fit and determining how you learn about the culture of a program. And it's hard to do so via websites, and residency programs have created social media pages, they have open houses, but how do you recommend that a person choose where to use their five signals, especially if it's not somewhere that they know a lot about?
So there, your job is to reverse engineer the same way we do, right? So we started from the bottom up, and the Association for Surgical Educators have talked a lot about this, right? When we talked about 2 years ago, a year ago, how are we going to have programs select people out holistically? One of the ideas was mission statement and what residents fit in that mission statement. For the students, it's the same basic idea. What am I looking for in a residency program? What are the characteristics that are most important to me, right? It may be that you're in a major city. It may be that you're not in a major city. Mm-hmm. It may be that you want to be in a hyper academic environment because you want your first R01 5 years after fellowship. And that means 2 years in the lab during residency, getting papers and podiums on, getting a fellowship that will allow you to springboard into your first job that puts you on the path for academic success. If that's what you want, fantastic. But the flip side is, I want to be a community surgeon. I want to go work in a community where I'm going to be a clinical monster and take care of patients and do the thing that I love to do, which is operate and make my patients better. Both of those are fine. For some people, sounds awful. For other people, sounds great. My best friend is a plastic surgeon. My other best friend is a trauma surgeon. The three of us do not see the world the same way. My friend who's a plastic surgeon loves elective surgery. Elective surgery terrifies me, because I feel like I have everything to lose and I'm not playing with house money. Trauma and acute care surgery, I feel like I'm playing with house money. These people are sick and we have the opportunity to make them better. And he does not understand that, the one who does elective practice. So you should look for programs that give you what you want. If you hate trauma, then you should not come to a hospital that the dominant division and the one where you spend a ton of time in is trauma. That's not going to be perfect for you. But that means that you have to do a lot of introspection and a lot of understanding what you want. And then you can start looking for programs on their social media. And it's not so hard once you know what you're looking for to find it. It is almost impossible when you have no idea what you want to go look for it, because there's just too many programs out there, right? You need to target in first And this is the hard part of the application that I don't think students understand, is that the homework that you have to put in is understanding what you're looking for, right? And it may change, right? That's fine. I was going to be a pediatrician. I wanted to be a pediatrician. I hated surgery. And now I'm a surgeon. Okay. It just happened that way. But the program I applied to gave me what I wanted at the time. I love the idea of working at underserved, classically inner city residency where I was going to be able to take care of patients early on. And because that's what I knew and I felt comfortable with that. That might not be for everybody. You need to find out what you like and then you can target it. And there's so much information out there. Forget about mainstream social media, which you can find a ton on. But I said, medical students are smart and they're evolving. There are tons of websites that I do not know about, but medical students do, where they talk about programs because after they interview, there are all of these places where you can write down all of your ideas and really understand what makes a program tick. If you take all those things together, you can have it's not perfect in any way, shape, or form, but you should have a pretty good idea of what that program is kind of like. And then when you ask questions, and this is the one, hey, do you have any questions for me? That's your opportunity to say, okay, I know what they're advertising. Now let me see if it's for real. And if I get a different answer, I might be a little nervous, right? Is it just the attendings and the residents and the program directors putting on Sunday best to try to get me to think about a culture that doesn't exist? If 85 students who have rotated through that place all say that they're brutal and oppressive, and then when you go and interview, it's kumbaya and everybody loves each other, maybe it's changed, right? Then your next question should be, how has your program changed over the last 5 years? And if they say things like, we are very comfortable, we put out a great product, we don't need to change, we just got to keep doing what we're doing, then I'd worry about that. But that means that you have to sit down and know who you are mm-hmm. and what you want, and then give a little wiggle room, because you never know. I can't tell you how many medical students I have and early residents who say they're going to do one field, and then 5 to 7 years later, they've completely done an about face and want to do something else. So you will change. But if you're in a culture that you really like and you're around people who are supportive to you, then the chances are that you'll be able to make that pivot and do really well, as opposed to being in a place that's very, very focused on one thing or two things only, and then you're not able to pivot away from that. So fit matters depending on who you are. The supplemental helps.
Well, you have shared with us so many tips in regards to putting together this supplemental application in order to figure out where you want to go and what to look for in a program. Is there anything else that you would like to add about the supplemental application for those general surgery applicants applying this year?
So this is going to sound like complete BS, but I'm going to say, because I think it's true. I know that the supplemental is more work. I really do. And I've heard from a lot of students that they hate that they have to do more. There are programs out there. There are a ton of programs out there that just want to get to know who you are. And all these programs are dedicated to looking at you as a person and not as a match number and a series of high stake tests that are supposed to predict things. The supplemental is as close in a bad system as we have to trying to accomplish that. This is the first step. Change happens with the first step that forces us to look at the world a little different. If we had this interview 5 years from now or 10 years from now, I think it's going to look very different than it is now. But I think both of us would be able to look back and say, hey, the supplemental was a good beginning, but it wasn't the end, right? If you go into it saying, I'm going to use this to get these programs to know who I am as a person, I think that the extra time spent is worth it, okay? If you are trying to game the system and use ERAS and supplemental application to try to make you look like something that you're not so you'll fit into a program, you will be 100% miserable doing the application, and it will not come across as genuine unless you're applying to a program that doesn't want to look at genuine people, okay? And that's up to you. If you want to fit into a box and this is the road you want to take, I have no problem with that. As long as you're honest with yourself, that's okay. But the supplemental is really trying to let you shine as a person, and we're trying to figure out how to do that. This is the first iteration of what's going to change over time.
Well, I love how you described that it's an evolving process, and it will be interesting to see where we look 5 to 10 years from now from how we have changed in regards to the match process and helping both programs as well as applicants. Well, that's all the time we have today with Dr. Dottillo. Thanks for joining us at Inside the Match. Special thanks to Kevin McLeod for the music, and be sure to follow or subscribe to our podcast. Catch our next podcast to learn more application tips and hear from another awesome leader in medical education.